Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Now listen to this. This is not made up. Twitter Public Policy posted this yesterday ahead of the Ugandan election. We're hearing reports that internet service providers are being ordered to block social media and messaging apps. We strongly condemn internet shutdowns. They are hugely harmful, violate basic human rights, and the principles of the open internet. So Twitter, which has banned and been banning and blocking conservatives and Trump supporters and the President of the United States, they are in the full-blown censorship business along with so many other outlets, have the audacity to send out this message that they condemn such action in Uganda. So evidently they believe in freedom of expression and the free and open internet in Uganda, just not the United States of America. Coming up, I want to read to you some portions of a Wall Street Journal piece by a former prosecutor who specifically prosecuted individuals who would take the occasion of protests and turn them into something violent, and lays out his argument as to why in no way, shape, or form, even coming close, did Trump do anything that incited violence last week. First, the latest news update with Nathaniel Pauly on Springfield's Talk 104.1. Partly sunny, high of 56 for the day, 36 for a low tonight, 20% chance of showers tomorrow, high of 47, and a mix of rain and snow on Friday with a high of 38. Emily Johnson, Rhodes Real Estate. Some people, everyone has a different approach. For some, it is build an empire, which is totally awesome and cool. But if you're going to build an empire, a real estate empire, that's going to require lots of foot soldiers, if you will. And that means that, you know, you're sort of head of an organization. You don't have the day-to-day direct contact with the clients. And that's not how Emily Johnson does things. She's more of a personal advocate, personal assistant when it comes to being your real estate agent. You meet with her. Every communication that you have regarding the selling of your home or the buying of a new home is with her. You call her office. If she's not there, you don't get handed off to some team member that will deal with you and pass your information along. Your call gets forwarded right to her cell phone. So if that's the sort of personal touch service and advocacy you want, then I recommend, when it comes to buying your home or selling your home, Emily Johnson, Rhodes Real Estate. 890-1455 is her number, and you can always find and like her on Facebook. See other people's reviews, their experiences they've had. You could probably even send them a message if you have any questions. And you can always send Emily a message as well. Her Facebook page is Emily Johnson, Rhodes Real Estate. That number again, 890-1455. There is a former assistant attorney general for the District of Columbia by the name of Jeffrey Scott Shapiro. And he's written a piece in the Wall Street Journal laying out the reasons why Trump's speech doesn't come close to rising to the level of incitement. He starts off in the piece detailing his credentials on the issue itself. So this isn't just some attorney, a real estate attorney or family attorney that's giving his opinion on protesting laws. This is a guy who earned the nickname Protester Prosecutor. This was what he did. He writes in the Wall Street Journal, the president didn't commit incitement or any other crime. I should know, as a Washington prosecutor, I earned the nickname Protester Prosecutor from the anti-war group Code Pink. In one trial, I convicted 31 protesters who disrupted congressional traffic by obstructing the Capitol crypt. In another, I convicted a Code Pink activist who smeared her hands with fake blood, charged at then-Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice in a House hearing room, and incited the audience to seize the Secretary of State physically. By the way, Code Pink was worshipped and praised by Democrats and the left. They were never called inciters. He would write, I dropped charges when the facts fell short of the legal standard for incitement. One such defendant was the anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan. After citing D.C. law on incitement and provocation, which was based on the 1969 Supreme Court case, Shapiro pointed out that Trump's speech fell far short of any requirements under the D.C. law. He writes, the president didn't even mention violence on Wednesday, much less provoke or incite it. He said, quote, I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. Boy, that really is inciting, isn't it? Using the word peaceful? Oh, boy. It's clearly a secret code word that he was using. They all knew ahead of time. When he says, march over there peacefully, what he really meant was try and overthrow the government. Shapiro continues, district law defines a riot as a, quote, public disturbance, which by tumultuous and violent conduct or the threat thereof creates grave danger of damage or injury to property or persons. When Mr. Trump spoke, there was no public disturbance. There was a rally. The disturbance came at the Capitol by a small minority who entered the perimeter and broke the law, and those people should be prosecuted. And as we talked about earlier, as we learn more about the timeline, much of that occurred before Trump was even talking. George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley has made similar arguments, as has Nick Armana, Arama. Another elephant in the room, according to Red State, that the Democrats and the media are reluctant to mention is the timeline issue. According to CBS News, Catherine Herridge, who is one of the few actual journalists on a national level, the first pipe bomb was said to have been found at the Republican National you don't hear that much, do you? That the Republican National Committee was targeted with a pipe bomb. That was 12:45. This was as Trump was still giving his speech. So it was before the so-called march that he ordered. From that alone, along with the rioter who came prepared with zip ties, we can glean that the storming of the Capitol was likely pre-planned. In other words, random protesters likely weren't just standing around listening to Trump's speech and then getting incited enough to leave and then make and plant the pipe bombs. Now, I'll add, it's not mentioned here in Red State's piece, the fact that there is a Democrat congresswoman from New Jersey who claimed that 24 hours prior, Republican congresspersons were giving tours that were recon tours to some of these individuals. Now, of course, there's absolutely no evidence at all that this was the case. But let's say for a moment what she is claiming is true. Well, that completely and totally negates the argument that this was an otherwise perfectly happy, fine crowd of people that only decided to go and commit this act of vandalism and violence because of what Trump said. You cannot have it both ways. You can't claim that Trump's speech caused it, but that 24 hours beforehand it was being planned. Even the Democrats are contradicting their own claims. Red State continues, there's still a lot we don't know and we're still learning, but the Trump incitement argument is falling apart by the minute. That, of course, won't stop the revenge-minded Democrats in Congress, as we are seeing on a daily basis. So the crux of their argument, and, you know, this is what's important to understand about the claim that it was incited, right? If you incite something, that means that it wasn't otherwise going to happen. That the only reason it occurred was because of things that you did or said. So in order for their claim, and this is what they're arguing when it comes to impeachment, to be accurate, is that none of these people had even the thought of doing such a thing, but somehow what Trump said or did caused those people to go and storm the Capitol. That is the case that they have to make. Even if you want to forget that, you say, all right, we don't have free speech, and even though he did not, what he talked about was going peacefully, even if all of that, let's say they have to demonstrate that it wouldn't have happened unless he said it. But then you have other Democrats arguing that it was pre-planned and that members of Congress were part of it. Well, if that were the case, then these weren't individuals who were incited by Trump at that speech. So which was it? I hope that these are questions that are brought up by Republicans as this gets discussed. And by the way, I fully suspect that people like Mitt Romney will not only support this, but they will vote to convict President Trump despite the clear police state mentality that is being implemented in the nation's capital. Against, by the way, this isn't just against Trump. This is against Americans. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. I found an interesting story. There were numerous stories, actually, from some time ago during the Arab Spring. This is where people who don't live in free countries were wanting to live in free countries. They were wanting at least to have some sort of semblance of human rights recognized by the government. And so there were uprisings, right? You remember this. Part of the reason this was noteworthy is because the United States did not back, even morally, these people who simply wanted freedom. We kind of just sat quietly. We did not support the Iranian people. And one of the areas that we did not support them was when they were desperately pleading for help or pressure from the international community, specifically led by the United States, when it came to internet censorship. One of the reasons that they were able to communicate more freely than they had in the past was because of the ease of communication with the internet. But in Iran, you had the suppression of this occurring. And this was part of the way that they prevented freedom from spreading through Iran, was to do what it is that you have Twitter, Facebook, and these other outlets like Amazon doing today in the United States. By the way, you don't hear a lot about it, but there has been condemnation from other world leaders. The president of Mexico has condemned this censorship in the United States. Angela Merkel of Germany has condemned this form of censorship in the United States. Did you ever think you'd see the day when Democrats would wield such power that foreign leaders, Germany, Mexico, are condemning censorship of citizens in the United States? Before they had their way, for those of you that don't know, depending on your age, we oftentimes were referred to as the leader of the free world. In other words, we were the freest country. This is why people came here, because we had freedoms. And now the left has done such a tremendous job of destroying those freedoms and those civil liberties, specifically including the ability to have the free exchange of ideas, that we are being criticized by foreign leaders. You know, when Trump was fully engaged as president, you know, before he was on his way out, anytime there was condemnation of the United States, people on the left would post about it and say, we're the laughingstock of the world because of Trump. Look at what the rest of the world thinks about us. Even this country and that country recognizes that Trump doesn't know what he's doing. They love to post that. But now that you have foreign leaders criticizing the Democrats' crackdown on civil liberties in the way of free speech in this country, they oddly don't seem to worry about what the rest of the world thinks, do they? Isn't that interesting? There's a piece, and this is VPN Overview, Censorship in Iran, that was written some time ago. For Iranians, censorship is a fact of life. This is where we are in America today. This is about Iran several years ago. I mean, it still applies today, but it was written in the shadow of the Arab Spring. For Iranians, censorship is a fact of life. According to the independent watchdog organization Freedom House, Iran remains one of the worst countries in the world for internet freedom. I wonder where we'll place after about 6 months from now. I mean, really, when it comes to the next rankings, where will we fall? You know that group that was founded by a former, who is a citizen of the United States, a former Democrat, the Walk Away organization, and the page had like 500,000 members of people that just walk. They just had to walk away from the what they viewed as the nastiness and the close-mindedness of the Democrat Party in this attempt to silence dissension. Their point has been made as their, I think it was their Facebook page or their Twitter page, has been eliminated, including the 500,000 followers. You're not even allowed to leave the Democrat Party now without being punished. The telecommunications company of Iran, it was written at the time, that the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance are working alongside native internet service providers to implement content control software for websites and email. So in other words, and tell me how much of a parallel is this today, they were cut from the same cloth. You had the powers that be in Iran on the same page as those who controlled the platforms in which people communicated on the internet, working together in order to suppress those who dare question authority. That is replicated in the United States today. You have political allies of the Biden administration that run these different platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and others, that are working in conjunction with one another in order to suppress the communication of free ideas amongst those who do not fall in political lines. It's the same thing that Iran was doing years ago. It's what China's been doing. It's what all of these totalitarian governments have been doing. It goes on to just explore, and this isn't an editorial piece that was done. It was one of many pieces done just evaluating how it was that authoritarians would prevent people from communicating with one another and exchanging ideas, and how it was that they suppressed civil liberties by coordinating with their allies that run these ISPs or, you know, other platforms to prevent people from communicating. And I just thought it's pretty interesting when you look back on that, and when we all thought, the fact that Democrats today have taken a page from the playbook of the number one exporter of terrorism in the world, and I have yet to hear one elected Democrat stand up and say we should not be doing this, including the soon-to-be president of the United States, whose inaugural theme is Uniting America. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. There are numerous celebrities that are calling for YouTube to ban Trump. Celebrities this is the same crew that would accuse Trump of somehow being a danger to free speech and free expression and the arts. And here they are openly encouraging censorship. By the way, some on the left, not that they give two hoots about the Constitution because they seem intent on completely destroying it in any fashion possible, but they will often talk about, well, you know, the First Amendment, that, you know, that doesn't apply to private industry. That is correct, but that doesn't mean it's not censorship. The First Amendment is regarding people's ability to freely speak and call out the powers that be without being punished. Now, we are seeing violations of that at the hands of Democrats wanting to criminalize speech. In fact, right now, there's an article, I think Fox News has, where there are some divisions within the Democrat Party whether or not to push forward legislation that would criminalize as domestic violence free speech that they don't agree with. And I'll talk about that coming up. But that doesn't mean that private industry can't engage in censorship. It may be constitutionally protected censorship, but it's still censorship. You've got Sacha Baron Cohen. You've got Mark Ruffalo. You've got Mark Hamill. These others, Kerry Washington, Adam Scott, Deborah Messing. These are just a few Hollywood celebrities that aren't only supportive of censorship, but are utilizing public pressure to try and force YouTube in order to censor. All of this acting, and now we know it is in the past, about, oh, the value and freedoms of expression and the need to fight back against those who would violate human rights of freedom of expression, they are now leading the charge in order to violate your civil liberties, in order to violate your human rights, to suppress them. Finally, they have exposed themselves for who they really are. Springfield's Talk 104.1, I'm Nick Reed. Springfield's Talk 104.1. Don't forget to try for your part of that $50,000 in advertising we've got going on. You may have heard the ads. We did this once before. We're doing it a little bit different. Last time we had a first, second, and third place winner, and it first place got more than second and third and so forth. Sort of your traditional tiering. But this time around, we're doing 50,000 and five local businesses are going to get $10,000 in advertising business with us. This isn't one of those deals where you have to spend a dollar to get a dollar. It's not a coupon. This is our way of trying to help so many local businesses. You know, you get inspired. You see businesses stepping up and helping other businesses where they can during these times in which government's solution to COVID is to take steps that do tremendous harm to local businesses. And this is one area where we can help out by giving up some of the inventory that we have. And in order to get registered, it's simple. You don't have to give some, you know, background as to your business or why it is that you deserve it. That's not what we're doing. It'll be a you know, just a drawing, if you will, of five local businesses. Each get $10,000 in advertising from Summit Springfield. We have four stations. This one, of course, Springfield's Talk 104.1. We have Power 96.5, KTTS, and The River. You can go to KSGF.com to get registered for this stuff. And download the app while you're at it. How about that? Here's Nathaniel Pauly with the latest news update on Springfield's Talk 104.1. KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Partly sunny, high of 56 today, 36 for a low tonight. 20% chance of showers tomorrow in the afternoon with a high of 47. And Friday, a mix of rain and snow with a high of 38, 27 degrees. Now, update or referencing the story before we went to traffic about the champions of free speech in Hollywood that were pushing for YouTube to suppress free speech of the president of the United States. They have succeeded, and YouTube has banned indefinitely Trump. So you have collectively the Democrats running essentially every major communication outlet, preventing Americans from hearing from the president of the United States. Oh, all in the name of protecting democracy, of course. One of these sob squads, which one is it? It's not Tlaib. It's one I always forget her name. Pramila Jayapal. She, and I call them sob squad because, and they, what do they usually call them? Something squad. I don't know. I call them sob squad. I've called them sob squad so long I don't even remember what they're originally called. But I call them sob squad because they're always whining about something. Well, in the latest, sob is coming from Representative Pramila Jayapal, who is claiming that she tested positive from COVID because these cruel, evil Republicans, while she was locked away in the Capitol, trying to protect herself from the Trump rioters, was in a closed-off room with other Republicans who not only refused to wear a mask, but they mocked the idea of wearing one, and somehow she knows that's how she contracted the coronavirus. It was because of that. Now, she doesn't offer up any evidence as to how she knows it was Republicans that gave her the coronavirus, but she's still sobbing about it anyway. There are a couple of problems with her claim, though. One was the fact that Nancy Pelosi allowed COVID positive members on the House floor last week as long as they were there to vote for her as Speaker of the House. Now, she didn't complain about that. And of course, she doesn't suspect that maybe that's how she got it. No, no, of course not. But secondly, a video posted by Jayapal herself and other House members and aides shows that at one point, you know, when she's crouched down with several other members of the House chamber as the rioters were entering the building, and guess what she wasn't wearing? She wasn't wearing a mask. So this piece of trash, yeah, that's my personal opinion, who is out there trying to claim, by the way, she's saying that those members of the House should be removed. She said that Republicans not only cruelly refused to wear a mask, but recklessly mocked colleagues and staff who offered them one, and she is claiming they need to be punished because of this. Well, it turns out that she didn't have a problem with COVID-positive people on the House floor as long as they were Democrats, and she herself was not wearing a mask. But this is another one of those instances where you don't let the truth, you don't let the facts get in the way. House member leadership in the GOP, according to Fox News, is not going to lobby members to vote against impeachment. GOP leadership is not going to lobby members to vote against impeachment of Donald Trump, according to two House Republican leadership sources. One senior Republican aide said this is a conscience vote for the members. I don't believe it will be whipped. Nevertheless, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy sent a letter to GOP House members that he opposes impeaching the president, saying do so would further divide the country in the wake of the attacks on the Capitol last week, and proposed other ways the House could respond. And we heard him talk about censorship. This, I believe, is part of the reason that the Republican Party is going to suffer. And this is what the Republican Party does not seem to grasp. They don't seem to grasp that Trump voters do not see this simply as an attack on Trump. They see this as an attack on themselves. So when they see that Republicans, some, including Liz Cheney, who gets quite a bit of media attention, is going to support impeaching Trump, they see it as an indictment on them as voters, as Republicans, as Americans. When they see that the Republican Party is not even going to bother trying to convince other Republicans to not vote for impeachment, in other words, they're going to let him do it, like, all right, go ahead, do what you want to do, they see that as an attack on them as voters, not on Trump. I mean, they do see it on Trump. This is what Republicans don't understand. See, the Republican Party tends to see these, they compartmentalize. They see Trump, they see their voters, and they see them. And they think that Trump was just a moment in time for their voters. They think that, okay, these are our voters. Trump came along. Yeah, he was different. He was reckless. He was a little bit crazy. We don't like what he's doing and saying, so we can attack him. We can throw him under the bus. We can side with Democrats in attacking him if we want. And our voters, you know, they'll get over it. But what they don't realize is they're not really your voters anymore. They don't identify as your voters. They don't see a Republican do that and think, well, that really kind of sucks. But, you know, I'm a Republican. So ultimately, I'm going to side with Liz Cheney. I'm going to side with the Republican Party. I'm going to side with Mitch McConnell. Many, if not most, Republican voters view this ultimately as an attack on them. And when you do that sort of betrayal, you disconnect any sort of loyalty. And furthermore, what happens, and this is where they get into dangerous ground, and I know most of them are going to refuse to accept this. Republican voters see the Republican Party choosing Democrats over them. Even if they don't come outwardly and say it, if they're not in full defense, like a Josh Hawley or a Ted Cruz, then there's this sort of epiphany, and it's a feeling that, wait a minute, they're not on my side after all. What is the point? What difference does it make? Because they are just as quick to throw me under the bus as the Democrats are. I've never in my life heard so many people, when it comes to the issue of participating as a voter, utter the words, what's the point now, as I have in recent weeks. The Republican Party, in their mind, tell themselves, voters have been mad at us before, they got over it. And, more importantly, when it really comes down to it, they're not going to vote for a Democrat, they'll come back. It pretty much is the same perspective that Democrats take towards the African-American vote. They can use them, they can abuse them, they can dismiss them. I mean, heck. Look at the guy that just got elected president of the United States. He was about as pro-segregationist as you could get. Referred to busing as creating a jungle, which is why he was opposed to it, and told black people that they weren't really black unless they supported him. The way Democrats see the African-American vote is, we can do whatever we want to them. When it comes down to it, they'll come back. And a lot of the Republican establishment see Republican voters the same way. But I don't know, I don't believe that rebound is going to be quite as bountiful as they suspect. Even if Trump drops out of the whole political arena and there is a vacuum, there will be some that do fall into those categories, and some who genuinely believe, I will never vote Republican again, but, you know, come time it's Biden or Kamala running for re-election versus some Republican, you know, you get a Kristi Noem or a Nikki Haley, and you know, you think, well, how could I not? Although I suspect the party will not allow either of those two, particularly Noem, of ever getting the nomination. But all that aside, point being is I don't think they can rely on it, because this is a betrayal on a level that I don't think Republican voters have seen in their lifetimes. And again, there are some exceptions. You've got the Hollies that are out there, and you've got, and even, you know, Congressman Long, he's been, I think, pretty loyal when it comes to not falling into this trap of joining the establishment on the position of Trump, anyhow. Those individuals most likely won't have a difficult time getting reelected, but getting donations, you can forget the grassroots movement as it existed. I mean, there's no way that that's going to occur, at least in a generation or two for the Republican Party. We shall see. Time will tell. And of course, many, even if they do still support the Republicans, are going to say, what's the point? Because Democrats will not only be able to steal the election if they want, but Republicans will let them. And if there are any Republicans who dare stand up, they'll be accused of treason. They'll be accused of inciting violence. And so we're just back to where we are now. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Now, one piece of legislation that Democrats are reintroducing, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not Democrats who opposed it in the past will oppose it again. And the reason I say this is it was opposed by a number of Democrats and left-wing organizations, including the ACLU, when it was introduced in 2019. And it was regarding creating a domestic terrorism established new government offices to monitor suspicious activities within the country to combat domestic terrorism. And this was first reported on in November, and Dick Durbin, who sponsored such a bill back in 2019, introduced it when Trump was president. And Ocasio-Cortez was against it, the ACLU was against it, pointing out that something like this could be used against groups that don't have the numbers in order to have a majority in any meaningful way, and so it could be used by people in power in order to criminalize legal assembly and legal speech. But now that Biden and the Democrats are saying they're going to reintroduce it because Biden's president, and so now all of a sudden they think that they'll be able to get support for it. Will the left-wingers who claim that this would be a clear violation of civil liberties still stick by that, or will they now warm up to it because it's something they can use against people who supported Trump in order to criminalize that activity and potentially imprison these people? Fox News is reporting that Democrats are divided over the new domestic terrorism bill that would establish the new government offices to monitor what they deem to be suspicious activities within the country and combat terrorism with a specific focus on white nationalists and neo-Nazi descriptions, which, by the way, Democrats have used to describe Trump supporters. You see, on the surface, you think, well, yeah, I mean, neo-Nazis are bad, white nationalists are bad, okay. You have to understand, the people who want to put this in place think that many of you are neo-Nazis, think that many of you are white nationalists. I mean, Trump supporters are consistently labeled as being racist and white nationalists by mainstream Democrats. And now they are pushing legislation that would establish an office to monitor you based on that. President-elect Joe Biden has said making that domestic terrorism bill would be a priority, according to the Wall Street Journal. Biden's campaign website at the time said, a Biden administration will work for a domestic terrorism law that respects free speech and civil liberties. Huh. While making the same commitment to root out domestic terrorism as we have to stopping international terrorism. Well, if that's the case, you don't have much to worry about because that's an administration that said ISIS was just a JV team and let it flourish. The 2019 bill called for establishing offices in the Justice Department, FBI, and Department of Homeland Security that would analyze and monitor domestic terrorist activity, which, of course, according to them, includes conversations about anything that they deem white supremacy. I can guarantee you a program like this would fall under the watchful eye of these offices. Your phone calls into a show like this would fall under the watchful eye of such offices. Your emails, your Facebook postings would fall under the watchful eye of the offices if established. Now, at the time when Trump was president and Dick Durbin was proposing this, the ACLU opposed it. as have individuals like Ocasio-Cortez. So the question is, will they continue to, or will they now see it as an opportunity to put Trump supporters where they belong? Glenn Beck's coming up next. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm Nick Reed.